Let's get into the conversation about the removal of the public protector. Before we get to the substance of the conversation, let's get the facts down and so that we know what it is that we're talking about. Lulama, who is a SABC specialist reporter, is on the line with us right now. Lulama, what's Parliament asking for people to do, and how did we get to this point? It was a lengthy process. I mean, the complaint was registered in 2020, right? It is 2022, and only now is the process really picking up steam. There were a lot of court cases in between that. Talk to us about where this all started and how we got here, and what the details are that matter in that process.
Good morning, Oliver and the listeners. It's been a long, indeed, a long process. The establishment of this ad hoc committee, Section 194 committee, it was established in April last year. And we've passed April. It's only now starting to do its work. The last meeting of the committee was on the 11th of May. And it's because, Oliver, there's been interdicts that the public protector has been interdicting the committee from doing its work, approaching the courts, asking the committee not to do its work. And the committee now and again had to seek legal advice whether it will proceed, or it has the powers to proceed or not. But the legal advice that the committee has been getting now and again was that the process that is before the courts by the public protector has nothing to do with them, unless and until there's an interdict in front of the committee interdicting its work. It can only stop on that when there is that process.
My understanding is that the first interdict came when Parliament was instructed to design the process, and that actually started in the previous administration, right?
Administration.
Parliament had to design the process for the removal of the public protector, and the public protector challenged the constitutionality of that process to remove her. The court outcome there was that there's nothing wrong with the process, it's constitutional and therefore can be applied. Am I remembering that correct?
Yes, Oliver. Remember, this is the first of its kind. This case, there has never been a removal of or the impeachment of a public protector from office in this new democratic era. The first public protector was Advocate Selby Bakwa. He was succeeded by Advocate Lawrence Mushwana. The third public protector was Advocate Thuli Madonsela. And Advocate Musisiwe Mkhwebane is the fourth public protector. So there's never been a case of this nature. And even that, Oliver, the Parliament, the National Assembly, had to adopt rules for the removal from office of the public protector. So it just tells us that this case is not just a simple one. And hence Parliament, even the committee, whenever the public protector goes to court, although there is no interdict in front of them, but they will sort of halt the process and allow her until there's a decision on whatever matter that is approaching the court on. Because I guess Parliament is also moving that along the lines that this is going to set a precedent. So whatever they are doing, they must do it according to law, following the constitution and following the rules of the rules of the National Assembly that they had to adopt, Oliver, in order for them to remove the head of a Chapter 9 institution.
Thank you so much for that, Lulama. I really, really do appreciate it. Ritumetse Benedict Piri is on the line with us. He's the Managing Director of AU's Prudential Specialist Council. Dan Mafura, who's a research officer at KSEC, joins us this morning, as well as Karam Singh, the Executive Director of Corruption Watch. I'm going to begin with you, Ritumetse. This has become incredibly politicized, right? It only makes sense because the types of cases that the public protector has been impugned on were highly political cases. Her latest challenge to her removal process is that the president, who by law can now suspend her, given that the process has started, she argues cannot suspend her because she investigated him and is investigating him. Therefore, he is conflicted. You know, and the politicization of the public protector's office, of course, began with Thuli Madonsela, and when she, for instance, found adversely against Jacob Zuma. You know, what does this mean for the future of Chapter 9 institutions, or what are supposed to be independent institutions doing, you know, accountability work and investigative work, and the heads that are at the top of those institutions?
Good morning. Yeah, and I agree with you. It has become exceptionally politicized, and rather disappointingly so, because when you look at the robustness of a Chapter 9 institution, and specifically the Public Protector and the Auditor General, which have heightened protections to maintain their independence compared to the others. You know, the very fact that the test for her removal is misconduct, incapacity, or incompetence is actually there to stop the politicization of those particular offices. So it's meant to be a high standard which is ascertained objectively, you know, before that removal is then given effect to. Now, what has happened here is that, regretfully, the public protector has taken that very stringent process and added political considerations into it, which don't belong. Because ultimately, the question before Parliament is, in these reports, you know, the Absa Bank Corp report and the judgment that flowed from there, the SARS rogue unit, etc., and the scathing remarks that have been made by the judges relating to her conduct, has she misconducted herself? Now, that question in and of itself is discreet. It fits specifically within the framework of the Constitution. And the question of the president's bias actually has nothing to do with it. I think what we heard last week when the matter was being heard, her urgent interdict application was being heard, was that the president had actually made undertaking that for so long as there's a perception of bias around these matters that he's being investigated around, he wouldn't suspend her. And that's a separate matter altogether. But, you know, if we stuck to the legalities and what is actually at stake in this particular instance, it's actually really, really disappointing that it has been politicized, because we're dealing with a public protector that has potentially misconducted herself. And that actually must be something for Parliament to hold her accountable for.
Yeah. Dan Dumetu makes the point that what we're trying to do is create an objective standard for which a public protector must meet to be able to, you know, be fit and proper for office. Advocate Bazuzum Kobane interviewed incredibly so, right? She impressed all the political parties with the exception of the Democratic Alliance, and they decided to make a recommendation to the president that she be the one to be appointed for this office, right? Advocate Busiso Mkwebane has put out more than 1,000 reports on multiple investigations, the bulk of which are not challenged in court, the bulk of which are to be enforced. And from the amount of cases challenged in court, not all of them are overturned. Many of them are overturned, yeah, sure, but not all of them. And from those that are overturned, they're overturned on reasonable grounds for the most part. It is only but a few cases where the court is so scathing. For instance, as Jafta said, that an investigation must meet the basic standards of a proper investigation, and that the public protector has not met that standard in that specific case. How then do we balance and evaluate all of this and you know, evidence to come to the conclusion that, yeah, you've messed up way too many cases, therefore you are not competent? What should be the standard?
Sure. Hi, Oliver, and thanks for having me. So I think we need to be clear about what we're talking about here. The Office of the Public Protector is staffed by...
Sorry, Dan, can I ask that you just speak a little bit louder? You're not too audible.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, much better. Go ahead.
Right. So what I was saying was that we need to be clear about what we're talking about. The Public Protector's Office is staffed by investigators all across the country, legal advisors and researchers and things in their offices. And so a lot of these reports that come out of our office... she does not necessarily individually oversee right each and every one of them. But it is in those cases where she is personally involved or is the lead investigator, the person directing the investigation, that we see certain worrying behavior, certain worrying conduct in how these investigations are carried out. And I think it's important not only to look at the numbers, you know, how many cases have been won vis-a-vis how many cases have been lost, but the kind of conduct that is in question in those cases. Is this the kind of conduct that you would expect from a senior lawyer who is required by the Public Protector Act to be at least have 10 years of legal experience? Is this the kind of conduct that you want from them, and or you would expect from them? And that is why the courts are so so scathing, as you say, about the conduct of the public protector in some of these cases, because that is simply not what lawyers of her experience and stature are expected to behave.
Karam, the public protector, of course, reports to Parliament in a portfolio committee in Parliament, right? Surely, if the court says, well, your investigation process was flawed and not within reason of what an investigation process should look like, despite the fact that you have complete, you control over how you conduct your investigations. Surely a portfolio committee should 3-4 years ago have set the public protector down and say, hey, describe to us how you're going to fix your investigation processes that allow for some uniformity and predictability that is within reason of what a fair investigation process is. Can we blame a lack of oversight for some of the public protector's behavior that the court is impugning on? Karam, seeing the Executive Director of Corruption Watch is on the line with us. We're just struggling to hear her. I want to ask you that question as well. Can we blame oversight here for the public protector's poor performance?
I think what Parliament did do, and the question really will be whether it was time is enough, is actually move into a process. Obviously, it was initiated by the DA to hold the public protector to account when it became pretty clear that, you know, the courts were concerned about how she was conducting herself in respect of, investigations that were factional. So I think in this particular instance, we can say that Parliament is performing its accountability function in fashioning this process. I guess the question is about the timing, but certainly this was not needed, right? In the long line of the public protectors that were mentioned earlier, this was never needed before, and this is the first time that we've confronted such a situation, and I'm certainly happy that there is an accountability mechanism that is being put in place.
Yeah. Dan, the Legal Practice Council exists, of course, to make sure that the integrity of lawyers are intact and that those who perform subpar or are terrible at their job do not hold a license to practice and that they're stripped of any such titles, right? Should that not be the filter we use through which we measure fitness to hold office of any office that requires, a judicial aptitude?
So I think we might run the risk of, again, conflating things, right? So this is specifically about her fitness to hold office as public protector. And obviously, if there was a finding against her by the professional legal regulatory bodies, that would certainly have, or that would certainly be a prima facie ground for alleging that she was not fit and proper, but that is not necessarily the process that Parliament itself should be concerned with. I mean, if Parliament is given the power to inquire, establish, and then take a decision on whether or not an office bearer that they themselves recommend for appointment, whether that person should be removed, then that to me seems like the more straightforward process than waiting for a different process that is run by a professional legal body that would be considering things other than what Parliament, you know, would probably consider in order to make that decision. So I don't necessarily think that it should be left to Parliament or to the professional legal bodies for them to make that decision.
Ben, Ritumetse, is Parliament a fit and proper body to evaluate whether or not a judicial officer of any sort is good at understanding the law, or is this why public comment is so important in the process?
Yeah, and just to sort of just add on to Dan's point, right? In this particular context of this institution, it is constitutionally mandated, you know, and when you read together the Public Protector Act with that as well, that this person must be fit and proper. It is actually a constitutional mandate that she must be, or he must be, a fit and proper person. And then, you know, implied in that, you know, is that, you know, the person comes from the legal fraternity. And when you think of what that implies within a legal fraternity context, you know, it implies ethics, a high level of ethics.
Right.
It implies integrity. It implies reliability. Right. So at least at a super level, at a higher level, when you're appointing this person or the recommendations are being made in this public process that we're now following, I would hope that we are going to get suggestions of candidates who at least have those three qualities in place, right? And now the question for removal is a different one, because there we're actually talking about an objectively ascertainable misconduct or incompetence. And what creates the objective assessment of that are these court judgments, right? So in this particular instance, Parliament is absolutely correct to make a judgment around whether the public protector has misconducted herself or is incompetent. But then at the appointment stage, Parliament is exactly the right body to check if that person is actually fit and proper and meets the test, coming from the legal profession for more than 10 years, et cetera, et cetera.
Just maybe at an objective level, how many legal misinterpretations must be committed to raise a red flag and say, well, maybe this person isn't, you know, competent?
Yeah, but I guess here it's not about being overruled. It's the question of the depth of her lack of understanding of, firstly, her constitutional mandate. So if we talk about the Absa Bank Corp report and the recommendations and remedial action that she proposed, it had overstepped her constitutional mandate. So that's not just about being overruled. It's about, do you actually understand the context within which you operate as an office in this particular country? And if you get that wrong, then we certainly have the wrong public protector, because you are acting outside of your constitutional mandate. So I don't think that's a numbers game. That is a straightforward, you are acting beyond your mandate, and certainly you need to be reined in, right?
Yeah. Dan, do you want to add to that, specifically given that many people may argue, yeah, but courts, you know, rule outside of their mandate all the time. Courts overstep all the time. You know, there are judges that even argue about whether or not courts should be involved in certain political decisions in which litigants seek remedy from courts from.
Right. So I think the point that was just made is very important to say. It isn't just a question of misinterpretation. It's a question of would a similarly qualified person in her position make such a mistake, right? So that's the standard at which she's being judged, and it is a pretty high standard, granted. But the standard for appointment itself is quite high. And so the reason why you come under scrutiny for things like, you know, trying to direct Parliament to amend the Constitution, or not being frank and honest with the court. Those are serious, serious issues of integrity, issues of fitness, that lawyers of a certain seniority, of a certain level of seniority, are expected to appreciate.
Right.
And
right.
So when they are repeated over time, and in cases of particular public interest, it becomes concerning to the judges and to Parliament, to civil society, to people looking at these institutions to say, is this person really fit and proper for this particular office?
Right.
And so that is a point that should be made, that the public protector in her office, by virtue of an office, is an office of the court, and she has a special fiduciary duty to the court to help assist, not to mislead, not to be honest.
Right.
With the court.
Yeah. Absolutely. Dan Mafuta, thank you so much for your time this morning. Really do appreciate it. Ritumetsi Phiri, thank you so much for your time. Really, really do appreciate it. Liesel Wilson with the headlines. I'm so sorry that we ran late, but take it away.
Good morning. I think the problem, that there's nothing wrong with the public protector. The problem that she has touched the untouchables, your Ramaphosa, your Pravin Gordhan, Trevor Manuel and all. That's why it's like that, because if she has touched the other people who are being perceived maybe to other faction, I don't think there'll be such where we are. But the problem that now there are people who are untouchables, there's a problem that he has had the wrong guys. Thank you.
Good morning, Oliver. Oliver, Busisiwe Mkhwebane, field people of Estina. Busisiwe Mkhwebane exonerated all the Zuma cronies. He has never found any Zuma crony guilty of corruption or maladministration. He is a hired gun. Smoke it, Butler Park. Thank you.
Good morning, Oliver and listeners. The impeachment of the public protector is nothing but a political process. Are we supposed to also trust the very courts that are sealing the CR17 documents? Are we supposed to trust the courts whose decisions are being disseminated via some SMSs by some legal consultants? Are we supposed to trust the courts that have incarcerated a man without a trial and two of their justices actually agree? So everything is politicized. We know that the overall performance of the public protector is overwhelmingly exceptional. It is only these one, two, or three politicized cases. And I'm not saying that she didn't do anything wrong or get something wrong. But to impeach her is nothing but to get rid of her. And we as the public will suffer for that. So I think it is wrong to even do it. Let her finish her term. She's done well. Clean audits. Thank you.
Good day. This is Mike in Durban, CFM. Your panelists, some of your panelists, their reasoning is questionable, really. Judges up to the level of the Constitutional Court, Supreme Court, let me say up to the level of Supreme Court of Appeal. Every day, judgments are overturned. Judgments made by learned judges, you know, by judge presidents, they're overturned. What are they saying about those judges? They think they should be impeached because the judgments are overturned. I mean, a few cases where Mkhwebane's reports, you know, have been questioned and have been overturned. They now assume that she should be impeached before this. It just doesn't make sense.
Interesting comments that's coming out on the WhatsApp line. Do give us a call. The number to dial is 011-714-2006 if you'd like to participate in this conversation, ask a question or make a comment. Karam Singh, the Executive Director of Corruption Watch, joins us now. Karam, what do you make of the common perception that a lot of people have that the public protector is being targeted because she has dealt with a lot of politicized cases going after the political powerful and elite?
Hi, Oliver. Thanks so much for having me on the program. Look, I think there will be... You know,
sorry, Karam, can I ask that you just speak a little bit louder? You're not too audible at the moment.
Sorry, Oliver, can you hear me well now?
Yeah, much better. Go ahead.
Okay. No, I mean, I think that there will be different perceptions out there around the public protector. I mean, you hear it from the voicemails coming through. You know, it's the nature of her office that she's going to be dealing with matters which involve the conduct of public officials, that her investigations, you know, will touch on politics. You know, we're sitting in the context of a, you know, highly factionalized body politic, you know, that find themselves on different sides of investigations. But, you know, I think that it's important to note that, you know, that this has gone through a process at Parliament, you know, that there was a motion, that motion was debated, that there was an independent committee that came into place, the committee chaired by Judge Nkabenda with Judge Senior Counsel Insebeza and Duval, who did the preliminary assessment around whether they could go ahead with a proceeding. So it's not like something that Parliament has just sort of dreamed up out of nowhere, and it's been a very quick process. It's been quite drawn out, actually. And there's still a hearing that needs to be taken place where the public protector will have every opportunity to challenge, you know, these prima facie findings of misconduct and incompetence against her. So, you know, I think that, you know, we need to give the parliamentary process of exercising oversight some space to be able to do that now.
You know, I asked a question earlier, is Parliament intervening a bit too late here? Should they not have intervened earlier, not to say remove the public protector, but demand quite early on when the courts were making scathing judgments of the public protector to fix what is systemically wrong? That is to say, to fix how you do investigations, because the court said your investigations are terrible, to fix the investigative process, to make sure that these oversight issues don't happen, like withholding information from the court or not being honest with, you know, respondents and that sort of stuff.
You know, I think it really is a balancing act. You know, on the one hand, you don't want Parliament on the basis of one or two rulings initiating an inquiry. But I think it's important to note that the delays in this process are not delays which are as a result of Parliament failing to act swiftly enough. The delays in this process have been, you know, Stalingrad litigation tactics by the public protector to delay the substantive hearing taking place. So, you know, this hearing could have taken place last year already. That was when the committee was constituted. The public protectors had an opportunity to challenge the parliamentary process, and the courts have now fixed, you know, that process by saying, you know, there are certain elements of it. The issue of legal representation, for instance, on the side of the public protector wasn't guaranteed in the original process.
Yeah.
So, you know, let the process play itself out now. That would be the main thing that I would want to say.
011-714-2006. Give us a call. 011-714-2006. Give us a call. What's your comment or question to the conversation we're having? Send us a WhatsApp voice note on 0614-104-107.
Oliver Dixon on SAFM.
We're in the final stretch of the talking point. My name is Oliver Dixon, standing in this morning for Kethi Mohlahlana. And we're taking your calls and comments on the conversation we're having. What constitutes not being fit to hold office in the inquiry of the public protector's fitness to hold office? 011-714-2006. Give us a call. What's on your mind this morning? You can also send us a voice note and let us know what your comment is to this. Let's speak to Mrs. Naidu out in Durban. Good morning. Sorry, Mrs. Naidu just dropped off the line there. Irvin Kabeja, good morning.
Good morning. I'm calling from Kabeja. I just want to agree with the previous caller that said that the public protector is a victim of the people that he touched, that was untouchable, the Trevor Manuels, Cyril Ramaphosa, and most importantly, the Reserve Bank. And that is one of the issues why she has to be removed.
Okay, that's an interesting comment. Thank you so much for that, Irvin. Really do appreciate it. Mrs. Snyder out in Durban, good morning.
Good morning. Look, I just want to cut it short. The public protector took on the office. But the first thing she did was using the opposition, the EFF, used her to go after Cyril Ramaphosa, Pravin Gordhan, the bank and everything, because they want to get into power. And she suits their agenda. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much, Mrs. Naidu. Really, really do appreciate it. Interesting comment over there. Karam, I just want to bring it back because, you know, it's quite interesting that the public's perception is by and large that the public protector is a victim of the political elite, and we spoke about that, right, just very, very shortly. But there also seems to be some people within the public feeling that, no, she's actually done a great job. I launched a complaint with the public protector's office, it was investigated, and there was a favorable outcome or a positive outcome. Do you believe, by and large, that the public protector and ombudsman has taken the work of accountability quite serious?
Yeah, can you hear me, Oliver?
Yes, yes. Can you just speak a little bit louder right into your handset?
Right, okay. I mean, I think Dan made this point earlier, you know, that you in some instances you need to make a distinction between the office of the public protector and the actual public protector herself. So certainly, you know, the office of the public protector over this tenure has engaged in hundreds of different investigations, some of which have been conducted appropriately with appropriate outcomes that have satisfied the complainants. But I mean, at least in a number of, if you look at the final report of the independent panel looking at the prima facie assessment of whether there is a case to be answered to, they identify at least 9 different cases where there are at least over 20 different charges relating to issues around misconduct and incompetence, issues around misleading of the court, incompetence in terms of understanding her mandate, incorrect interpretation and application of the code. I mean, it just goes on and on. You can just look at the various court judgments which have referred to these instances. So, you know, I don't think that there is clear public opinion one way or the other. You know, the fact that you're going to frame the question the way that you have, and you'll have a couple of callers who will come in and say, oh, you know, she's being targeted, you know, I don't think really sways really where public opinion stands on this. I think if Parliament is given the opportunity now, following the report, following all of the litigation that's taken place, to actually conduct the hearing in open, with the charges put before the public protector, to let her adequately respond to those questions and those charges, then I think, you know, we can then go back to the public to say, do you understand what's happened here? Do you understand how serious these allegations are around, around incompetence and misconduct?
Yeah. More importantly, though, is that, it's once the public protector has been removed, you know, there's a precedent that has been set. But do we then have to, do you think we should revisit the standard through which we appoint the public protector, right? The earlier comment that Dan Mafuro made was that it's actually pretty high standard, right? And Rutumete said, well, the standard tested at level of integrity, at level of competence, and that we need to be able to test the fitness of the public protector at those same standards. Do you think we need to fix and perhaps even make our filtering system for competence and integrity a lot more stringent?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, and this has been an issue which Corruption Watch raised, you know, prior to the appointment of this public protector, that there needed to be much more coherent rules and a kind of process, open, transparent process, a process that could allow public engagement when it comes to the appointment of these high-profile offices. Currently we have a constitutional order which gives a lot of authority to the president when it comes to making these appointments. And, you know, we have seen in the previous appointment of the public protector, the parliament and the relevant committees in parliament activated to conduct these appointments at a high standard, with some levels of transparency and with some levels of public participation. You know, this is also an issue which has been flagged in the reports of the Zondo Commission around how appointments to high-profile offices get made. And I think, you know, it's really there, if you look historically, where some criticism can be pointed towards Parliament to say Parliament haven't put effective mechanisms in place to ensure that we get the best people appointed, you know, because it's gone through a very stringent process. So absolutely, that would be a strong recommendation we would make going forward.
Yeah. 011-714-2006. Give us a call. What is your comment on this conversation? Protas, who is in KZN, good morning.
Thanks for taking my call.
Go ahead, sir. What's in your mind?
Yes. If you point down a good now from the public protector, that lady is touching untouchables, Osiru Ramaphosa. Because when you touch her, Lendong Ibuga, who is year 17, a challenger, Osiru Ramaphosa, a court. When you argument, Mr. Raji, Ibuga argument, Mr. Advocate Vincent Malega, those advocates were making it clear. The public protector's conduct in relation to executive members' ethics act or ethics code, if I can refer it that way.
Can I just ask you a question, your Pratas? Because one of the things, and I think we need to test that sentiment against the evidence that the public protector is touching the untouchable, therefore she's facing these ramifications. One of the things the court said was that, well, she withheld evidence. She lied about the fact that she had a meeting with SSA, and that was crucial in the investigation process. What do you make about that, for instance? Surely that's not forgivable?
Yeah, surely about that. But in the first place, what I was referring to is the fact that ever since the public protector was against Cyril Ramaphosa's R17 campaign in relation to Executive Members Ethics Act, it's where trouble sets in, whereby public protectors' arguments were never been heard. Even the arguments, who advocate Vincent Malega, I remember, he submitted a document, I did a chronology. The document was making it clear what was the conduct of the public protector in relation to Executive Members Ethics Act. Because of the complaint, Mr. Musmaimane, got a case of 500,000 or donation or something. So, long to lay, I mean, you don't have a clear duty. This woman is touching untouchables.
Okay. Thank you.
If we have documents, I feel Ramaphosa like bank statement, that's about sealed. Whereas, abanyabantu exposure, we've seen things happening behind our backs. Money laundering, all those things. Why there are serious allegations against him? Investigator in the case. No, but he referred these matters to the parliament for them to investigate.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you so much for your call, Pratas. Really, really do appreciate it. Do you think, Karam, that greater effort should be made, at least I don't know from who or how, should be made to try and depoliticize the public protector's office? Because it really seems as though every time any public protector going forward will investigate the ruling party or members of the ruling party or the president, that it will be marred by the controversy of politicization, therefore saying whatever the outcomes is, one or other party must have been favored for political reasons, regardless of the merits of the issue.
Yeah, no, absolutely. We have a constitutional framework, right, which sets up different key institutions in Chapter 9 and Chapter 10 that are meant to be institutions to support the functioning of our democracy. You know, fortunately, many of those offices have been able to execute their mandate without the type of politicization that you're talking about. I'm thinking particularly about our extremely well-functioning office of the Auditor General. But it's the nature of the public protector's office that the public protector is going to get drawn into investigations which involve high-profile actors, which is why, you know, you need to have a public protector that's above scrutiny, a public protector who when their investigations get challenged in court are able to withstand the type of scrutiny that a court will take. And I think we had that absolutely with a public protector like Tuli Madonsela. And her office was politicized as well.
Yeah.
And she was attacked because she was going after the then untouchables at the time. So we can't have any untouchables in the country. You know, everybody is capable, must be subjected to oversight and accountability. That's the nature of our checks and balances system. But just because somebody is being challenged for their competency, you know, for their ability to execute their mandate, doesn't mean that they then become some kind of, somebody that's being unfairly targeted, you know, and people can just keep spewing that, and it's not really borne out by the facts. It's not borne out by the report of the independent panel, and it's not borne out by the independent judgments of various judges in various cases. So, you know, I would point, you know, for the people that are now going to proceed with this process in Parliament, there's a lot more work they can certainly do in terms of educating the public about how we got to this point.
Just before I do want to go back to the lines and take some voice notes, but just one last question I want to ask you as we wrap this up, Karam, is how important is the reputation for the credibility of the public protector? You know, for instance, in justice, we say that justice must not just be done; it must also be seen to be done and to be seen to be credible. How important is the reputation of the office of the public protector for its credibility?
No, I mean, it's absolutely critical. You know, it's absolutely important. And, you know, not everyone's going to like the person. Not everyone's going to agree with their judgments. But when investigations time and time again are getting overturned by courts on the basis of issues around integrity, issues around misrepresentation, issues around misconstruing of one's power, you know, then you have a serious concern. You know, if the public protector is exonerated through a parliamentary process, you know, then we can see where we are going forward. But I think you point to an important issue that you know, there has to be a sense that this is a person and an office that's above reproach and has the highest levels of ethics and integrity in terms of how they execute their mandate.
Okay, let's have a listen to some of your voice notes.
Morning, SA. I respect these three women. They don't let it go. They are fighters. Mgcobo Jeba, Mkhwebane, Magopini. But the problem of the public protector has a third force behind. That's why her cases are lambasted at court. She didn't win all her cases because she is instructed and time is ticking. She must solve all those lists be given to her. I don't know whether she copied at university. I don't know.
That's an interesting point. Mutufela and Machabeng, good morning.
Hello. There's not much time, but let me just say this. Indeed, our country is in big, big trouble. I don't think we deserve the democracy that we have. If there will be so many people who think that this public protector is being targeted, we have no country, I'm telling you, because, I mean, who will ever think that the DA, the ANC, the judges, the Constitutional Court, all of them are after this person because she is against Ramaphosa? I mean, this is crazy. I've never heard crap like this. Honestly, yeah. And we must do a very serious reflection that we can even entertain some of these thoughts. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much for your call, Mutufela. Really, really, really do appreciate it. Karam, just a final thought from your end. Why is it important that the public participates in this process?
You know, with all of these processes, whether it comes to appointments or whether it comes to removal, you know, we need to give an opportunity for the public to feed into that process. So the parliamentary committee, the parliamentary process is an absolutely appropriate opportunity for that to happen. And, you know, let the public have their say. Many people have interacted with the public protector's office and directly with this public protector. They may have relevant information which could help inform this inquiry.
Thank you so much for your time and your contribution here on The Talking Point. Really, really do appreciate it. That is Karam Singh, who is the Executive Director of Corruption Watch, who joined us this morning.